This is Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, and all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net.
911, what are you reporting?
We got someone or something crawling around out here.
Did you see what it was? Was it a person or an animal or?
I can't tell. All I know is that my sensor light came on and I just happened to glimpse and see this thing running across the yard. A good sized man or something that looks like a man. I don't know what it was. Just that it ran across the yard. Whatever it is, it's running. I couldn't catch it if I was going to chase it. Jesus Christ, you better.
Sure.
Yeah.
Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
That son of a bitch is about 6'9", I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Is he in your yard, sir?
Yeah, God, he's big.
Okay, what's he doing in your yard?
He's looking at me.
Okay. And the guy is on foot?
It's a big, real big person, that's all I can say.
Okay, but it is a person.
Yeah, I'd say it was a person or somebody really big, but he's all in black.
Is he a black male or a white male? Did you actually see whether, or was he just wearing black?
He's all black and he's big. He is big.
Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. This is Strange Harbor.
And another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird.
The strange, the unhinged, and the unacceptable.
Hey, you used those two like 2 weeks ago.
Did I?
Yeah.
I gotta get some new words here.
Johnny and Billy here, and our guest today from the BFRO, the man himself, Mr. Scott Taylor. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I thought the man himself was Matt Moneymaker, but...
Well, you'd know that better than anybody. For those that might not be informed as to who Scott Taylor is, do you want to give us just a quick bio?
Sure. So, I had my first encounter here in Grace Harbor County out in the Wainuchi Valley back in 2005, and my search for answers took me to a BFRO expedition, and from there... became an investigator and started working basically from the Cascades West and the Olympic South, and have investigated 172 reports at this point.
That's a lot.
Have slowed down in the last few years, but learned a lot. And now I feel like I'm kind of at that point where I really understand who they are, what they are, why they're here, where they came from, what to expect from them, and how to live with them, and just how to enjoy their company out in the woods.
And can you tell us what BFRO stands for?
BFRO stands for Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization. It was founded by Matt Moneymaker back in 1996.
Awesome.
Now, I've often told people if they've read any of the reports on the BFRO database and Grace Harbor especially, I know you cover more than just Grace Harbor, at least that's my understanding. I always see the, down below, Scott Taylor is a aerial space engineer and blah, blah, blah. You're the guy that comes and interviews people that have sightings, right?
Right, yeah. A person will have some kind of an experience, a sighting or something that happens, and they think it might be Bigfoot. Sometimes they know definitely it is Bigfoot because they see it. Mm-hmm. And they'll file a report on the website, www.bfro.net. Mm-hmm. And that goes into a huge database, and there's like 65,000 reports nationwide in that database.
Wow. Have to be fake, right?
You know what I found in looking through them? Especially just Washington State, is that probably 2/3 to 3/4 of them are actually the real thing.
Yeah.
The ones that are hoaxes are pretty easy to spot.
Yeah.
But I won't say how we do that because then that'll give it away.
Right.
But
right.
Most of them are factual. So working through these, and we are so far behind. We're like 1,000 reports behind. We just can't keep up. You really get a good flavor for what's going on out there, how many there might be just in a general sense. Nobody can go count them. But, we've heard people, very important people with PhDs say there can't be more than 75 in the whole state.
Right.
There's probably 75 within 10 miles radius of where we are right now.
Yeah.
So
you know,
there's a lot more of them out there. People are just running into them every day. It's so routine for some people, they don't even think anything of it. They don't report it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there are neighbors out there.
Have you heard about the Tohola sighting that was just this last weekend? I wouldn't expect you to because I know you're busy doing stuff.
Yeah, we've got a new house out by town of Matlock, and we're busy always painting or working or cutting lawn or doing something out there.
Well, rumor has it there was a sighting in Tohola this weekend. But it
wouldn't surprise me one bit.
Right.
Because that area right down there and down into Ocean Shores is where they winter over.
I noticed on the BFRO website, you go to Grace Harbor County, it's like the last 8 sightings were Ocean Shores or close, like real close. What do you think about all those sightings there?
So I've actually investigated, I think, 5 or 6 of the sightings in Ocean Shores. And the thing that people don't get is, you know, they think it's all populated and there's, you know, lots of people there, but it's seasonal. And the Sasquatches seem to come down there and spend from like October, November through maybe into April, beginning of April, they leave and they spend the winter down there. But if you go down there at night, 3/4 of the houses are empty. They're just they're seasonal homes. And so here's all this darkness in there, and that brush between the houses and the housing developments is so thick, you just step into it, you become invisible. Nobody can see you in there. And if you drive around and you look, you can see the big holes, the tunnels, and the brush where something big is going through besides deer. And the other thing that was interesting is one guy, since passed away, Arnie Ose, he had one that he kind of got to know it, and he would go out into the brush behind his house, sit down on a stool, then it would come sit with him.
Wow.
And he did that 17 times. He got really used to it. But what he said is, at one point I had 42 raccoons around my house, and they were running as heck. And then pretty soon they started to disappear, and now there's none. So I think that Sasquatch called him Big Jim. I think he had a lot of raccoons for lunch.
Do you have any other reports or stories you can share with us without compromising location or names of people or anything?
Well, a lot of people down on Ocean Shores are hearing them. And, you know, they hear them at night, especially people who smoke, because it's like, get up in the middle of the night, you know, 1, 2 in the morning, got to go to the bathroom, well, need to have a smoke, go out maybe on the deck or something like that, and they're out there and it's quiet, you know, they're having their smoke, and they're in a perfect position to hear or see something. One woman was up on her second floor balcony, and she saw this big animal running on all fours, chasing a deer down, running back and forth, chasing that deer down, finally caught the deer, killed it, grabbed it with one arm, and walked off. And she thought it was some kind of a big wolf or something like that, but it didn't have a snout. It had a face like a person.
Oh, wow.
Not too far from the first place I investigated there was right on the coast where they'd been hearing something and sound like rabbits being killed one night. Something was going on. And the woman goes, their deck, which looks over at the ocean, is second floor. She goes out there in her nightgown to see what's going on, and this big Sasquatch walked right underneath her, under the deck, and was inches from her feet, just the boards in between them. She freaked out, dropped her flashlight, ran back in the house. then there's the story of Arnie. There's another fella went out to his shed behind his house to get some flower pots, and there was one out there, and it walked by, tromping through the woods in this boom, boom, boom kind of stepping, and he ran for his life and ran into the shed and hid out until it left. And we searched around the area around there, and we found, I think, the place where it had been hanging out. And it had taken sticks and blocked the view from the street so it could go in there and hang out. I know it wasn't people because there was no trash, but we found a place where it was laying down and sleeping. Another couple down to the south end of Ocean Shores go out on their second floor deck and watch them forage around in the yard, play around. There was a male, a female, and a couple little kid ones, and they would just let the people watch them. They usually if they see you, they hightail it out of there because they don't like to be, you know, they get used to you.
So how do you think Bigfoot stays so invisible to us?
Well, invisible is a good word. Well, for one, their hair is of the texture that it out in the woods, they just look like a tree stump. It doesn't stand out as being anything other than just something that's natural out there. One of the first inclinations when they detect a human, especially if they're kind of surprised by it, would be to freeze or squat and freeze, or just flat on the ground and not move and just wait for you to leave. One friend of mine observed one across a canyon that was foraging. Some hunters were walking down the canyon and walked within 20 feet of it and never saw it. And all it did is it squatted down and put its head down and didn't look at them and just didn't move. And they walked right on by and never even knew he was there. That's their natural environment. They are masters of their environment. Right. And they are masters of concealment. Mm-hmm. They have the ability to observe you and choose the time to move when you're looking somewhere else. So when you're looking at them or their direction, they don't move. If you turn and you look somewhere else, they'll move. A lot of people think, oh, I saw a Bigfoot. Well, there's usually others around. And mm-hmm. if you spot one and you keep your eyes on it, another one will come help it out by coming off to the side or behind you and making some kind of commotion, whistling, a hoot, something to take your attention away. And as soon as you look away and look for that other sound, the first one disappears and takes off.
Teamwork.
Yep. And then there's the whole idea of cloaking.
I was going to ask you about that, your thoughts on...
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. Yeah.
Of course, I've seen it. I had one walk in front of me in a cloak state, and it was this big shimmering thing walking by, kind of like on the movie Predator. Mm-hmm. Myself and another investigator were standing there looking at it and going, what the heck just walked by? We weren't sure because I had read about cloaking in Tom Powell's book, The Locals. He talked about it. That was the first time I'd ever heard about it. So I reserved judgment because I had no experience to base that any conclusions on.
Right.
So this thing walks in front of us, goes about 50 yards further into the woods, and starts whistling at us. And so we had this little back and forth whistling little exchange, and then it got bored and walked away. We heard it walk away. Barb Shoup up in Greenwater actually got a recording of one that was cloaking. Well, it actually uncloaked and ran away. Mm-hmm. They all saw it, and she got the video. I got to see the video within days of it actually happening. I know Barb Shoup. I know all you know those people that are working up in that area.
Yeah.
No more trustworthy people. Not capable of faking something like that.
I don't think she's technically capable of staging something like that.
No.
You know?
She's as honest as can be.
Right. Wow, yeah, I've seen that video too. It's quite remarkable.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
you can see it on YouTube too. Just I think you search for Barb and Gabby. Like Barb and Gabby cloaking or something.
Yeah, Squatching with Barb and Gabby, cloaking Bigfoot, you'll find it.
Yeah, that's just bizarre.
Well, how do they do that? We think that their personal vibratory frequency is much higher than ours. So like an airplane propeller, when it's spinning fast enough, you can't see it any longer.
Right.
Because our eyes and our brains are not capable of recording in your brain the image when it's going too fast. You know, which has taken me into an area where I've had to do a lot of introspection and a lot of thought about what's our human limitations that are hindering us from being able to see them. And we humans are hemmed in by our eyesight, our hearing, really lousy sense of smell, our touch, and those kind of things. But we're kind of arrogant enough to think that if we can't see it, it's not there. But when you think about the electromagnetic spectrum, of which light is a part of, the visual portion is a very little sliver. You know, and you got infrared on one side and ultraviolet on the other side, and we got this one little sliver. Well, what's in the areas just right outside of our ability to see?
Mm-hmm.
There's stuff there. And I think that's where the Bigfoots reside, is a little more into the... I think ultraviolet, because I know one researcher who would take a picture of what she thought was probably a Bigfoot there, put the ultraviolet filter on it, and boom, there it comes right out. You can see it.
Wow.
There's other stuff going on that's beyond our human ability to perceive it.
Sure.
There are things that we can't see, but our camera can see.
Right.
And the first hint I got of that was I was helping one of the guys on the Olympic project go retrieve a camera that was way up on a ridgeline. And we had walked in about a mile and a half off trail. We were looking for it. And I just took my camera out, and I'm just looking through the viewfinder of my camera. Well, when that infrared flash started going off, I couldn't see it with my eyes, but my camera could see it. And it could display it in such a way that I could see it. And so we were able to find that camera that way. There's a lot we can't see that's still there.
Right.
Well, there's also the familiarity factor. When you're unfamiliar with a certain shape or just an item that maybe you've never seen before, it doesn't stand out. the way familiar things do.
Right.
So we're familiar with the trees and the rocks and the streams and mm-hmm. all the other things in the woods, but we're not familiar with the Bigfoot. We would actually have to see it and let it register on right. our brain. We would have to have, it takes more than a few moments to register that and then store that image so that when we see it again, it's familiar to us.
Right, right. Yeah, we're not quick on the pickup on that.
Right.
Another thing to think about is, you know, when science is taking pictures of something that they want to slow way down, they use a camera that might shoot at 10,000 frames per second. If you were to take that video and look at it at 10,000 frames per second, what are you going to see? Nothing.
Right.
You have to slow it down to the point where we humans can process the information. Now, suppose this being is vibrating faster than we can perceive it. What sure. happens? Boom, it blinks out. But if it's capable of changing that vibratory frequency down to somewhere where we are, or the deer and elk and the other things we can see, well, we can see it.
Do you think that they can, when they smell, you hear about the smell,
mm-hmm.
is that triggered? Can they control it? Or do they just stink from not bathing, in your opinion?
The stink is only talked about in about 10% of the reports. The initial encounter I had, the first thing that got my attention was the smell.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very strong, very pungent, kind of nasty. Once you smell it, you'll never forget it. One thing that Autumn Williams said in her book was that when she was a little girl, her mother took her to the BNI store there in Tacoma, and they had Ivan the Gorilla there.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
Ivan the Gorilla was an unaltered gorilla. Gorillas have a gland in their armpits where they can make this real powerful stink. She said as soon as she got in there and smelled that, it was the same smell that she was smelling out at their cabin out along the Carbon River out by mm-hmm. Orting. So, you know, there's a connection,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Yeah.
A big being that's, you know, all hairy, living in the forest naturally. Mm-hmm. You know, so do they have the same kind of gland? Maybe they do. So people have seen them and seen them up close and said, I don't smell anything.
Mm-hmm.
The other hand, the females are girls. They like to smell nice. So in the dark, we can tell, if we're smelling them, we can tell the females from the males because the males smell bad.
Mm-hmm.
The females smell nice. They'll smell like cinnamon, vanilla, fresh baked donuts, just a very, very pleasant smell.
How do you think that's possible? I mean, they don't have perfume in the woods, right?
Pheromones. Would
yeah.
be my guess.
Yeah.
You know, we don't, there's so much that we have learned to accept because of repeated instances of the same thing happening over and over again at different places all over. And even though we accept it, that it happens and it's associated with them, we still don't know how
mm-hmm.
it happens. But
right.
we do know it's associated with them. So it may be pheromones,
right.
You know, us humans, every once in a while, there'll be that really special girl mm-hmm. who walks by and you smell something really nice and she doesn't have any perfume on. What is that?
Yeah.
You know, we're wired the same kind of way. We just don't necessarily recognize it.
Yeah. How about like if I wear cologne or aftershave or anything, and I know this is like all hypothetical and opinion, but do you think that would smell good to them or do you think it would smell bad to them?
I think it would smell bad to them.
Yeah.
There was a gentleman who he wrote a small book and I forgot what it's called. I read it not long after I got into this, so it's been more than 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
But he was down in Northern California. He had a cabin and he had one that would come around his cabin and kind of hang out, and because it was remote enough, it trusted him. But what he found was if he used deodorant or any kind of cologne, it wouldn't come near him.
Hmm.
But if he let himself go really stinky, it would come around.
Hmm.
So I don't think they like the artificial smells
yeah.
too much.
Right.
If I thought that I saw a Bigfoot and I called you up and I told you that I think I saw a Bigfoot, what would you do to investigate that?
Well, generally, the first thing I will do is talk with you on the phone. and ask you, tell me what happened, and just let you talk.
Yeah.
And I would be noting things and writing things down, taking notes as you're talking. If it is a sighting where there might be something ongoing, I might want to meet you there and take a look at the scene and try to understand the context of what happened, because context means a lot. We've oftentimes had small Bigfoot who have small feet. They don't have big feet. They have human-sized feet. And some people will look at one of those, and I even cast one of those, and we'll look at one of those and go, oh, well, that has to be a human because it's small. But when you look at the context, you're a half a mile from the nearest road. There's snow on the ground. You got a creek running, you know, through this area. It's December. Mm-hmm. And why is there barefoot children's footprints in that area? No mom's going to let her kid run around barefoot out in that area.
Right.
So the context says that is not a human, even though the foot may look like ours. So back to your question. So what I would do, find out from you what you saw, try to pull out more information from you that maybe you didn't think to talk about, ask you some open-ended questions, and get you to maybe reveal some things that you didn't realize was associated with Bigfoots. That happens most often in what we call a habituation scenario, where a person is like, they have a house that's out in kind of nowhere in the sticks, and they have this persistent ongoing activity that they don't necessarily associate with Bigfoot, but they hear these funny whistles and they'll feel like, I'm being watched. I go to let the dogs out. The dogs don't want to go outside, but you know, it's been 10 hours since they've been out to take a pee. They need to go outside, but they don't want to go outside. People like walking out to take care of the animals, and have the dogs will kind of crowd around them and try to push them back towards the house. Sometimes the dogs want to protect the person, and I know of one instance where the dogs charged into the brush to chase away the Bigfoot that was there, and the Bigfoot picked up the dog and threw it like a football right back.
Oh, wow.
He did it. Threw it twice, and then the dog said, okay, I'm done. You know, back to the house. Actually, all three of that person's dogs were pretty well beat up by Sasquatch because they were acting aggressive to them. Mm-hmm. The same people now have a new dog. The other dogs, enough time's gone by, they've naturally passed on. They have a new dog that they've had since a puppy. And that dog loves the Sasquatches, and they love him. And he'll go out, they'll let him out, he'll go out, he'll play with them for several hours, he'll come back, he stinks like them, but he's happy as can be, and they all get along just fine, no problems.
Well, we're talking with Scott Taylor of the BFRO. Coming up, we'll talk more about his Sasquatch experiences, his research, and hunters. You know, you hear that, I've been in the woods my whole life and I ain't seen nothing. Well, we're going to ask him about that coming up on Strange Harbor.
You're listening to Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor, be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
Well, it's Strange Harbor, and we talk about the weird in the studio. We have, from the BFRO, my good friend Scott Taylor. Scott, I've been in their woods my whole life, and I ain't seen or heard nothing.
Yeah, I hear that a lot, too. You know, my first encounter, I was hunting, and I've been hunting since I was 12 years old. Got my hunter safety card, back in Oregon, way back in 1967, and I hadn't seen one either. But when you do, suddenly, you know. After I had got a full nose of that smell, I started thinking back through the years. about how many times I had been out, whether hunting, target shooting, camping, and smelled that smell and not connected it with Bigfoots. And because I didn't know if they were real or not, you know, the Patterson-Gimlin film was brand new at that time, and I was just a kid, you know. But I would say that probably almost all the hunters that have been out there very much have been observed. They just don't know it.
Right.
They probably ran into something that they couldn't connect with Bigfoots. Like when I was doing it, you know, first thing I saw was this little pile of stones on a log. And I thought, what person had the time to waste piling up stones for no reason on a log in the middle of nowhere? Well, I've since learned they do that. Some kind of a marker. I don't know what it is for sure, but they do that. Then there was the smell, like I said before. You know, like, well, you know, who dumped a carcass off somewhere? And you look around and go, wait a minute, I'm not at a place where anybody's going to just dump a carcass off. You know, people do that along logging roads, you know. They've gotten their deer, their elk, and they've butchered it and boned it out, and they want to discard the bones, and so they'll take them and, you know, throw them off along the side of the road, you know. So smelled that and, you know, thought, well, you know, it's just, you know, a dead carcass. Well, maybe it was actually one of them and they didn't get that. Heard sounds that sound like birds. You know, the one thing about the Bigfoots is they can mimic anything, including people's voices. But they're used to communicating in a not an overt way to us. You know, the 800-pound owl, so to speak, you know. Different whistles and things. They can communicate in whistles. It's almost like a second language to them. And so these are sounds that sound normal and natural out in the forest, and people are not going to necessarily pick up on that's what they're hearing. And so, yeah, the hunters may say, yeah, I've been out in the woods for 40 years and I've never seen one. Loggers say the same thing, although I think they have more opportunity to see them, but they probably run into them and just never even realized it.
I took David Ellis to an area one time, and it was about 9 o'clock in the morning, and right before we crossed this threshold, and it was actually an area I'd taken you to, we heard a knock, and then we heard a knock when we got so far in, and then we heard a knock as we were leaving, crossing that threshold back out. And he was the one that pointed it out.
I know the place.
Yeah, you know exactly.
that's kind of fun. I took before I was married, I took a lady that I was dating and took her out there, and it was just right at dusk, and I said, okay, roll the windows down. And then we're going to pull up and shut the engine off and just quietly sit for a few minutes. And we did that, pulled up, stopped, knock, knock, knock. They were announcing that we were there.
Yeah. And a lot of people just wouldn't know or notice a distant knock or anything like that.
Right.
Like you were talking about things that we just don't pay attention to.
Yeah, you might think of some guy hammering at that house that's a half mile down the road or something like that.
Right. Yeah. Right. Just hammering once. Okay, you hear the question, bones. How come we don't find bones if there's Bigfoots out in those woods?
Well, I don't think they leave their departed ones to just rot on the ground. People, you know, will oftentimes find deer bones and elk bones and that kind of thing. But around the Pacific Northwest, we don't find very many of those naturally occurring or winter killed type skeletons around. They get consumed by the environment very quickly. The bones get disarticulated by coyotes and bears and other animals that will eat them, you know, ravens and crows and all kinds of things that feast on carrion. So I don't think that they leave them. You know, the experience that I've had is that they're people. So, like us, we're going to take care of our departed loved ones. And there was a fella down in Florida who had an opportunity to watch a burial of an infant. And what they did is they dug a hole, a pretty deep hole, They put the dead infant in the hole. And then they brought a tree over that they had yanked out of the ground and transplanted the tree right over the grave.
Oh, yeah.
And then filled the dirt in around it and made it so you couldn't even tell that anything had ever happened there. So they're not leaving anything out where people are going to find them.
Right. How about pictures? Another common thing is everybody has a camera in their hand. And how come we don't get pictures of them?
So the sightings people have are usually very surprising. And even if they have a camera in their hands, they're probably so gobstruck, they don't even, you know, they're just kind of trying to simulate what it is I just see. So they even, don't even have an opportunity to get that camera up and take a picture. The sightings are fleeting enough, maybe lasting a half a second. Mm-hmm. You don't have time to get your camera even up and take the picture. I had an opportunity on one of the expeditions to be driving back to the main base camp with my camera on in my hand, and one walked across the road in front of us. And the passenger says, "Scott, there's one." And before I could make my finger push that shutter, it was gone.
Wow.
And now these days, we got our cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
How long does it take you to first find the camera app and then turn it on, get the picture framed.
Yeah, get it
and
loaded.
And take the picture.
All that, yeah.
You're like 5-10 seconds if you're really fast. You're never going to get one.
Right.
They are just too fleeting and too quick. I think it was the third investigation I ever did when I got started on this. It was down by PL. And the gentleman was deer hunting in an area that had been gated for years. And they opened the gates and let some people in. So he took his son and his son's girlfriend. He dropped his son off at the top of a hill where he could look over a clear cut. And then he drove on down to the end of the road. And there was a log landing. It was in a clear cut. There was a log landing. He turned around and he starts to come back. It's right at dusk. And he sees this big hairy fur ball off to the side of the road about 10, 15 feet right down on the ground. And so he pulls up and he stops. And he's wondering, what is that dead thing there? Well, it was Bigfoot, and it stood up.
Oh.
And it stood up looking at him. And they looked at each other for probably not more than about 15, maybe 20 seconds. And he's totally awestruck, and he's scared. And it's looking around like, what do I do now? And it opened its mouth. He could see down to where its tonsils were. Mm-hmm. He could tell me the color of its tongue, what the teeth looked like, how big they were, all of that stuff. It was so burned into his mind. And it screamed at him so loud that all he could do was scream in response out of total terror.
Right.
And then it just turned and walked away down the hill, muttering and basically probably in Bigfoot language, cussing him out. He had a camera right next to him. He also had a rifle. The encounter is so mind-numbing that he never thought to grab the camera. He never thought to, you know, people say, well, I'm going to shoot one. I'm going to bag me a Bigfoot.
Right.
Well, good luck with that. They take care of themselves really well, and I'm not even worried that anybody's ever going to successfully do that. Although I've heard stories of people who have shot them, and I've heard that the results for the person are usually not very good.
Right.
You're just so completely overwhelmed by the experience, you don't think.
Yeah, they're not supposed
to
exist, and there is one right there.
Yeah.
And it's huge.
Yeah. Turns your worldview completely upside down. I've heard that more than once. I experienced it that way, and I was just talking to a lady this past week. She saw one south of the city of Yelm. Her reaction was identical to mine in the effect that it has on your entire view of the world. Humans are no longer the top of the food chain. You know, there's something else out there that's bigger and badder than us, and we can't control it. And so for humans, that's a really uneasy place to be. Another thing, like the hunter saying, I've been out there all these years and never seen a thing. Well, how many years have people been camping and never heard a tree fall? People just don't hear tree falls, you know, unless the wind's blowing real hard or something like that, which is, you know, storm and, you know, special circumstances. But when it's calm and quiet night and then you hear like two trees fall, that's kind of unheard of. And then when you have this happen multiple times, they're pushing the trees down. And there's some people have some videos of, you know, trees going over and you know, it's another one of those things where you really can't prove anything, but it's more than likely what they've got is pictures of a Bigfoot
like
pushing a tree.
Like Thinker Thunker has some really good videos.
Yeah.
I mean, he really puts science into it for those people that want the science to back it up. He does just that.
Yep.
You're a Thinker Thunker fan?
I like him.
Me too.
You know, there's various opinions of everybody.
Right.
And there's also ego and professional jealousy going on. And I don't like that person over there because they're learning something that I'm not. You know, that
why didn't
attitude.
I think of that?
Yeah, if you want to have success researching Bigfoots, you got to have a humble heart. Maybe not believe everything you hear, but keep an open mind because there's a lot of things that you're going to experience that you can't explain But if you dismiss them and close your mind, you're kind of done. But if you just file that little tidbit away and wait for something to corroborate it or explain it, you're going to find out there's a lot of new things to learn out there.
What if I live out in the woods and I have some kind of things going on that now that you're saying something, well, you know, I had that happen too. Maybe I do have them around here. Is there anything I could do to kind of figure out if they're around my
sure,
place?
Sure, sure. You can have some fun with them. You can put out a pattern of rocks. Take a picture and watch for them to change it. You can put out a pattern of sticks. We call them a glyph, and watch for them to change it. They'll change it in a way that only something with opposable thumbs can do.
Right.
You can play those kind of games.
Now, where would I do this? Would I do it right outside my door, or would I go out farther? Or
you could do it anywhere from right outside your door to out further. Mm-hmm. If you put things out where these kind of things out where they can't be seen messing mm-hmm. with them, mm-hmm. they like that a little better, I think. You can gift them. You can give them fruits and vegetables and sandwiches and pizza and those kind of fun things. You know, probably nothing's going to happen at first. And it takes them a while to realize you're not trying to trick them. Mm-hmm. Don't put out a trail camera because that's you're done. Mm-hmm. They won't come around it. And after a while, they'll start taking things. What we've found is that they may take most of it, but they'll leave some for you. A wild animal is going to destroy it all,
right.
Eat it all, spread it all out. But one example, our Napa vine site that we check on every few months. My wife Susan and I, we went out and we had taken a loaf of bread, made peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and so we had this big, took an old pizza tray, you know, cardboard pizza tray, piled the sandwiches up on that, took it out there, put it on the stump that we gift them out there. Don't put it on the ground. Mm-hmm. Animals eat off the ground. They won't eat off the ground. Put it on a stump. We spent the night out there in the dark, just sleeping out in the cots. Nothing happened. We leave. Next night, all the sandwiches disappear but one. One of the sandwiches was found leaning against the sliding glass door of these people's house.
Wow.
Whoa.
So they took the sandwich, leaving a very nice thumbprint in the corner of the sandwich, put it against the sliding glass door enough to say, thank you for the sandwiches. Mm-hmm. We're leaving you this so you know it was us, mm-hmm. and so you can have some.
Wow.
And the thing was, they went out of in the morning, they went to let the dog out, went outside with the dog, and saw it when they came back in. It was leaning there. The dog didn't touch it or anything. And so mm-hmm. they put the dog away, called us up. We got in a mm-hmm. rig, went right down there, found it, took pictures, and I got it in my freezer right now. But
wow.
So you can do things like that to interact with them. Picture it like this. You have a new neighbor move in down the street, and you want to get to know them. Are you going to sneak down to their place and put out trail cameras around their house? Or are you going to go down there with a tray of cookies or a pie or something like that?
Right.
What's going to get you the best results?
Right.
So you use food. You know, it's kind of like a universal language.
Yeah.
Other things you can do. If you're a musician, play music for them.
Mm-hmm.
Sing for them. They love that stuff. They will realize that you're interacting with them, and they will reciprocate in kind. And it's not a scary thing at all. It's really kind of nice and fun. But it's very subtle.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to walk right out and say, wave to you and say, hi, how you doing? I'd love for them to do that, but they're not going to do that. But
so this could take years.
It could take years, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are they meat eaters or vegetarians?
I would say they're omnivores.
Are they?
Yeah, they eat a little bit of everything out there. If they ate all the deer regularly, we wouldn't have any deer around here. We wouldn't have any elk, you know. So, you know, they eat a lot of small game, birds. What I learned early on was that if you find a pile of bones that is neatly arranged, that was probably them having a snack, because they're kind of like OCD with their neatness.
Right.
They will like eat the bird, and they will take all the bones and suck all the meat off the bones and then neatly lay the bones out side by side. And wild animals don't do that.
Right. Humans don't do that.
No. We leave a mess.
That's right.
Reports of aggressiveness. Do you have any of those ever?
Oh, yeah. So they have this thing we call the vibe. You'll like be out maybe hiking or going for a walk or hunting or something and or even fishing. And you get to a certain place and all of a sudden you get this heebie-jeebies feeling like I shouldn't be here. You know, that's what we call the vibe. And that is intended to make you go away. They can turn that up. We call it infrasound because we don't know what else to call it. People that have heard it have heard and their hearing is better than mine. They hear a very low pitched growl, and then they hear the pitch decrease to where now they can't hear it. suddenly it's vibrating in their chest, and it will make you sick, queasy, you'll want to leave. The military does a similar thing these days with a non-lethal methods of messing with the enemy's troops.
Right.
So they do that. You want to leave. If you say, for instance, you walk into an area where maybe they have young ones, maybe they have pregnant females, they're guarding it, they don't want you there, they may yell and scream at you. They may even charge you and make you run, but they don't want to catch you. They just want you to leave. Mm-hmm. I know of several accounts where the person was chased out. One account where they tripped and fell and they thought, oh my God, I'm dead. He's going to get me. It stopped and waited for him to get up and keep running. And it just kept run with them.
Right.
They can run so fast that if they wanted to catch you, you don't have a chance.
Right.
I had a co-worker's sister was driving between Yelm and Spanaway on, was it 507? It's going through, at that time they called Fort Lewis, now JBLM. And there's a frontage road along one side that's inside the base area. And one was running and keeping up with her car.
Wow.
And she was going 55. So, you know, they have a little fun. Hey, let's see if we can keep up with this car, you know. Similar thing was seen on Interstate 84 up the Columbia Gorge. Mm-hmm. A lot of people saw that. We're calling it in to 911. Several of them were police officers. And this one was trying to cross the freeway and kind of got scared because of all the traffic. So he's running down the freeway along the shoulder looking for some way to get across. Mm-hmm. And it's just running like crazy. And it's going 50, 55 miles an
wow.
hour. And, you know, all these people are seeing it. He looked terrified, they said. But so, yeah, they can run really, really fast.
Wow.
Yeah, well, did you do the report or the follow-up, the investigation of the Iron Gate Bridge and the guy that saw the Sasquatch run across the street chasing a deer? He drew a sketch of it and everything.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So this gentleman was retired. He's since passed on. Lived in Ocean Shores, and he drove into Hoquiam here to get his Social Security check from the mail. And on the way back, it's late in the afternoon. The sun is down fairly low on the horizon. Clear day. Not many people on the road because it's midweek. And he had just passed the bridge and gone a little further west. And there was a clear cut on the right. And he sees this deer come shooting across the road going full tilt, and he realized something's after that deer, so I better slow down. So he slows down, and this big Sasquatch right on the heels of that deer comes shooting out, and so he stopped. Well, the Sasquatch stopped along the side of the road, had gone up just a little bit above him on the bank on the south side of the road, and stopped and stared at him. He said it was old-looking, gray-colored, gray hair. The hair on its head was thinning. He said because of the backlight, he could see the shape of its skull, and he says, no sagittal crest. Its head was just like ours. So, you know, maybe they don't always have a sagittal crest. But anyway, they stood there looking at each other. It said something to him in what sounded like Salish, gestured to him to go away. He said it helicoptered as it turned. It put its arms out as it turned and dove off into the brush, with its arms pushing the brush like it was swimming through the brush, but it was pushing the brush away as it walked away from him. And he was in a little sports car, convertible, top down, nothing but between him and the Sasquatch, but 15 feet of space. And, you know, he thought he was probably not going to survive. You know, he was very upset. But he drew a picture, and he was a pretty good artist. He drew a pretty good picture of it, and it looks just like a Native American person that's just very big.
This gentleman is either lying, trying to hoax you, and is making up this elaborate story that just out of the blue, or he's crazy and thought he saw this, or he actually saw this and experienced this. Right?
Right.
I mean, are those our
right.
options?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a pretty convincing story to me with as detailed as just you told it.
So there's a kind of a way to tell, and that's to evaluate their emotional response when they're retelling the story. Like I said, upsetting to your worldview, upsetting to your whole psyche.
It changes you, right?
It changes you, yes. And people generally start to tear up. It's so overwhelming, the reliving what they saw, that they choke up, they tear up. You know, the guy down by PL that saw one when he was telling us of it, he was crying. There's also kind of a connection that is made between us and them mm-hmm. when you have a close interaction. It draws you towards them, it seems to me.
Mm-hmm.
Some people try to bury the whole thing and push it out of their mind, bury it in their memories and not talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
They can't do that forever. I know for me, it's like, why am I so afraid of the experience I had? why do I want to have another one? Mm-hmm. Why do I want to find out what they are? Why do I want to find out who they are? Why do I want to get closer to them? Why do I want to have another experience if they're so terrifying or if they're so dangerous? There's a connection that they have between them, and it's kind of similar to two twin children. They are connected in a way that other siblings are not. And that's pretty well understood by most people. There's a connection between humans that we have. We're just not good at it.
Right.
They're very good at it. And they connect with us. And so it's like, once you're connected with them, you're kind of stuck with them. But it's kind of a blessing, too.
So when you've had that experience, do you think that they seek you out again?
There are people who are followed their entire lives. One report I took, they never filed it on a BFRO. They filed it as a comment and asked for somebody to come talk to them. They didn't want to put anything in writing. So I went and I talked to them. As we talked about the sighting they had just had, I started asking more questions. And what I found out was she remembers as a toddler being picked up out of her crib by a big hairy person and taken off to be with the hairy people for a few hours and then was brought back. And then she's had these persistent experiences her whole life that have something to do with them. That person is tagged, so to speak, and they, for some reason, are interested in following them. The odd thing was, is it was her husband, who was in the Army at the time, who saw it walk by their house in the dark. He was out working on a quad. It walked by, and he saw it, and it looked at him as he walked by. Well, when I got him by himself and started talking to him, I found out he's had experience since he was a kid.
Is there any way a listener could contact you, maybe if they had an experience or a sighting they'd want to share with you or anything?
So the best thing to do is to go on the BFRO website, file a report. If you're going to file a report, write it out in Word or something first, because once you pull up that part of the site where you can put your report in, you're going to want to copy from Word, put it in, because it's got a time limit. It'll time out on you.
Oh.
But go ahead, file a report. You can request a particular investigator, and if you put my name in, Scott Taylor, if I don't see it, somebody will let me know.
Right.
And I can follow up on it.
This has been great, and I think that we could probably do 2 or 3 more shows easily.
Oh, sure.
Well, thanks again for being here, man.
Yeah,
you're welcome.
You're
welcome. Looking forward to it again.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of Strange Harbor. If you'd like to listen to back episodes or contact Billy and yell at him for his new age hooey, log on to strangeharbor.net.
And stay strange.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor.